To data, warp speed, please.
Tired yet? Yeah, it's hour 16.
Okay, and we're back. So we're now heading into hour 16, which is incredible.
16 already.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we've just got we got Colin. Colin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi,
just
Colin.
Want to say congratulations, guys, on making it to 16 hours.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? Thank you.
It's unbelievable, and I've been looking at the feed, Justin, and everything. I'm amazed how many people have stuck with you all the way through as well. It's very impressive. It's off to all your fans and followers. It's a credit to you, and it's a credit to all of them.
Thank you. Yeah, well, Tom's still here, so he's been here since 8 o'clock last night. Even I went off and had a kip, and Wayne's had a bit of a rest, and you had a few hours kip as well, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I would stay on for longer, but my body doesn't allow me to. I'm not good without sleep. I just doze off whether I want to or not.
Yeah, but you got to remember Tom's Welsh, and there's not a lot goes on in Wales, so.
So, Colin, thanks for joining us. It's good of you to come on. We've got you on a little later as well, I think, haven't we?
Yeah. With an episode review later.
Yes, so looking forward to that. So, I'm sure everyone knows who you are, Colin, but just in case anyone doesn't, would you like to pimp yourself out a little bit and tell everyone who you are and what you do?
I'm Colin Higgins from England, and I've been quite active in the Trek community for an awfully long time. And I do 3 podcasts and a YouTube channel, which are all science fiction and Star Trek related. 2 podcasts on the Trek FM network, which is Trek News and Views, and Decade. I'm also the English host on the Red Shirt Army, and I did a YouTube channel for Sci-Fi Diner podcast.
Excellent. So I'm sure everyone does listen to your show, but just in case, then head on over to Trek FM, where you can download both Trek News and Views and Decade, and they're both well worth a listen.
Thank you. Yeah, Decade is a Star Trek Online dedicated podcast, which I do with Tom, who's moaning in the feed about burning his finger. There you go.
Yeah, I think
you burned. I think what he was doing.
Yeah.
I think you burnt his hand on a bacon sandwich or on his cup of tea or something, I think, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's careless, yeah. Tom. That's what happens when you've been awake for 16 hours, Tom.
Yeah. George and Gracie don't eat them, Tom.
Excellent. Okay, Colin, so we've got you on today. We thought we'd have a little chat about the Prime Directive.
Yes. And I can really see this staying on topic.
We will try. So, the Prime Directive was—it's an interesting concept because it was also known as Starfleet's, I think it's Priority Order Number
General Order One,
and it is one of Starfleet's highest laws, I guess. And of course, the Prime Directive says that that they should never interfere with the natural development of any society or culture, even if that intention is to do some good.
Well, it was so important, they were actually sworn to uphold it, even at the cost of their own lives or the lives of their crew.
That's right, yeah, Captain is, you know, I think every Starfleet officer signs up to this and say, yeah, they will give their life to defend the Prime Directive, which does seem a little extreme, but I would think there'll be lots of situations where the Prime Directive could cause massive damage to other cultures. You can imagine what would happen to a culture. Let's just say our culture now, or maybe our culture a little while ago, if, you know, an alien race came along with all of this advanced technology that was several hundred years ahead of us and just suddenly gave us all of this technology. I'm not sure we would be able to cope with it, and I think it would ultimately be destructive.
Oh, no. We'd self-destruct, for sure.
Sorry, Colin.
No, go on, Paul.
I was just going to say Picard's speech in Symbiosis summed it up, didn't it? Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Yeah, when he was going, oh, it's not a set of rules, it's a philosophy, and history's proven that if people interfere, the results are always disastrous.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. When you think about parallels on Earth, so European settlers into North America, they, you know, interfered with the Native American culture and effectively killed off a lot of that culture.
Wiped it out, yeah.
Wiped it out, and to some extent with the Australian Aborigines as well.
Yeah, and you've also got the when they find these tribes buried deep in the Amazon rainforest that have had no contact with the modern world, and they're cutting down because the loggers find them, and then their whole civilization is just destroyed instantly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. There's this alien, because, I mean, you can call it alien, the alien influence of people going into that sort of environment does just literally wipe out their culture, destroys everything that they know.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine what would happen to us if we, you know, we decided to go and explore the oceans, and we went managed to get down deeper than we've ever been before, and we discovered there was a whole other advanced civilization living underneath the sea. That would probably throw the whole world into turmoil. Which is the same thing as the people in the forests coming out and realizing that there's all of us here.
Yeah,
yeah, that's like James Cameron did in Abyss. When you had the advanced civilization on the ocean floor, and when we found it, they realised it was a threat and it was going to wipe us out.
Yeah, I like that movie. I haven't seen that in ages.
Yeah,
they
could control the oceans, and it was once humanity found them, and the first contact with humanity finding them was, I think it was a nuclear torpedo. So they thought...
Oh, a nice little hello then.
Yeah, yeah. So it was like, okay, you're going to throw to us, we're going to throw tidal waves at you. So... But that's a prime example of someone with inferior and sophisticated technology coming up against each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the episode Symbiosis, Paul, and that's an interesting one, and that was one I was going to bring up, because the Prime Directive could be used in many different ways, and in that episode there's the Onarans and the... Oh, I can't remember the name of the other species... But they're on two different planets, and one of them is the Breccians, of course, yes. One of them, they're suffering from a disease, in inverted commas, and the other race is providing them with a medicine, which is preventing it from killing everyone. And, of course, we discover that this medicine is, in fact, a drug, and for centuries, they actually cured this disease the first time this drug was used, but the drug was so addictive that basically one society... had their only industry was to produce this drug for the other, and this other society provided everything, you know, to these drug dealers, and you know, they had formed this symbiotic relationship between the two where they relied on each other, and the Enterprise encounters this, they realize it is a drug, and you know that they're not permitted to interfere. Picard says that, and I can't remember if it's the Breck. I think, is it the Breccians who are the drug dealers, or is it the Onarans?
Oh, I can't remember which way around it was.
It wouldn't. I don't know. I think it was the other way around, weren't it?
Yeah, I can't quite remember. But whoever they,
are the ones who have the lack of medicine.
Yeah. Okay, so it's the Breccians producing the drugs.
Yeah.
And
the Breccians just exploit them as basically a slave race.
Yes, that's it. They provide them with this drug, and they just all of their labor goes into providing them with all of their comforts, and they seem to live in a great deal of comfort, while the other race is suffering, and when Picard reveals to them,
Yokim's in it.
Yes,
Kirk's son's in it, and Yokim.
Yes, he is in it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Before he got muscles. Yeah, before he got muscles.
Yes. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. But when Picard reveals to them about the Prime Directive and that they can't interfere, you know, they're very pleased about this. But Picard, I think, quite cleverly uses the Prime Directive to try and resolve this situation by not offering to fix their shuttles, so the trade between the two planets would effectively stop.
Yeah. Wasn't that the one and all where Beverly Crusher was getting irate because he wouldn't cure him?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, because she was going, we can cure him. She was following her medical ethics. And he was.
I like these Star Trek episodes when you've got that conflict, when you've got one person who says, well, these are my ethics, and this is what I need to do. And the other is saying, well, these are our ethics, and this is what we need to do. And then seeing how they resolve it. I love that because you can relate that to so many in real life situations. It's one of those episodes that you sort of store into your memory bank so you can use it in sort of real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also an interesting contrast to the Enterprise episode where Archer finds a planet where the one civilization is dying out and he tells Phlox to find a cure.
Yes.
And Phlox finds a cure, but he doesn't want to give him the cure because he sees the dying out of that one race as natural evolution.
So yeah. It would allow
the other race to flourish.
Because yeah. They were the ones that were like used as slaves. Like, they were just sort of, slaves or something, weren't they?
They were used as workers.
Yeah, and yeah. And Archer didn't have the Prime Directive.
No, they had something. They did mention something fairly similar. Didn't the Vulcans have a non-interference directive or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah. And he actually says in the episode that one day someone will come up with a rule to guide us in these situations, which obviously is what the Prime Directive became.
Yeah.
But when they did that episode, I thought that was a nice contrast to the TNG episode, which obviously came before. Mm. And the person who's holding Archer back in that one is Phlox with medical ethics, which is the complete opposite of what Beverly was doing.
Yes.
In TNG episode. So it was a nice little contrast, a nice little twist
on the same sort of angle. But I mean, it's a tough decision to make, isn't it? Because what do you do? Do you try and save this race, or do you allow nature to take its course? You know, it's a bit like
the other TNG episode when the proto Vulcans see Picard as God.
Who watches the Watchers? Yeah, one of my favourites. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there again, he's trying to stick to the Prime Directive because he doesn't want to influence their development. He does, and then when he realises that he's got to tell them, he's got to violate the Prime Directive, otherwise these people are going to, when they go away, these people are going to think that they're gods.
Yes, they're going to pollute the culture to a great degree.
Yeah. There's been quite a few episodes. There was another one where the Ferengi were on that planet and they were being worshipped as gods.
Oh, yes, in Voyager. Profit motive, I think. False prophets.
Yeah, that was it. They'd come through a wormhole or however they got there, and they just settled down as gods and fleecing everybody.
Yeah, they exploited a local legend, didn't they?
Yeah.
About gods who would come from the sky, and they're basically just running this planet, and everyone on the entire planet is just serving them. They're living the life of Riley. Great episode and Voyager manages to...
Let's see how your sleep-addled brain works then, Mark, because what's the first mention of the Prime Directive?
First mention? Oh, chronologically?
Yeah.
It would be in a TOS episode, obviously. Fairly early on.
Yeah, it's season one.
Is it something like Bread and Circuses?
Yeah, it's Return of the Archons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was quite shocked at that because that's episode 21. I thought it'd be earlier.
Oh, really? Yeah, I would have thought it would have been a lot earlier than that because 21 puts it almost at the end of season one.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the time, Kirk was flirting, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, Kirk's interpretation of the Prime Directive is loose at the best of times.
If you can shag it, it's all right.
Yeah. If you can shag it, then it's fine. If you can't shag it and you can conquer it, that's fine. Otherwise, yeah, Prime Directive.
Just blow it up.
I mean, he's the only Starfleet captain to order General Order 24, isn't he? So.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, absolutely.
I was just going to say I was quite shocked that it was basically near the end of the run. Before they introduced the Prime Directive.
Yeah, and there's a few episodes as well where... What is the episode called? I think it's Patterns of Force, I think, where they visit that planet and it's populated by Nazis.
Oh,
yeah, because the other stuff...
Why have you got so many Nazi episodes?
There are a lot. I mean, there are quite a few references, aren't there? I mean, they're obvious bad guys, aren't they? Mentioned once in TOS at least, and several times in Enterprise. We've obviously got it right at the beginning of season four.
I'm not sure where the other.
Well, Well, in Voyager, the Hirogen have a holodeck program.
Yeah, Nanaxes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's in TOS.
Was that that one, or was that... No, it's Killing Game.
Yes, yeah. Killing Game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Yeah, and they come up with a peace deal by giving them holographic technology.
Yeah.
But, it's in Enterprise. The Nazis are in Enterprise, TOS, Voyager. The Cardassians could be interpreted as a Nazi-like state, so that covers DS9.
Yeah, I don't... Well, you do have a couple of brief appearances by the Cardassians in TNG, but...
Yeah.
There aren't really many references, but obviously no. TNG was that very happy-clappy, sticking quite close to Gene's vision type of series, so they didn't do a lot of that. Although you could, in many ways, interpret a lot of the enemies in different ways. So even someone like the Borg, who were just ruthless, you know, are they alien space Nazis? Possibly.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, with the Prime Directive, was it IHU?
IBorg.
Yeah, with Hugh, when Picard had the chance to wipe him out, and he chose not to commit genocide, and then he got his butt chewed and spat back out by the Admiralty for not doing it.
Yeah. But is that? I don't know if that's.
Shows Picard's character, because Picard, out of all the captains, was the one that stuck to the Prime Directive the most.
Yes, he was the most moral of captains, I would say. The others would all... No, he had very, very few morals. And obviously, Sisko was willing to do what it took. We've talked about In the Pale Moonlight a lot, but he was willing to do whatever it took to bring the Romulans into the war, even if that did mean lying and cheating and... effectively being an accessory to murder. And that's something that Picard would never have done.
Yeah, but he'd probably just go with the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
But Sisko and all, because of the nature of DS9, because it was basically a space station-based program, he's not really going to have any problems with the Prime Directive as such, as regards to, like, Kirk and Archer and Picard, who are exploring space.
Yeah. I think Sisko had it a lot harder, though, because at least all the others, if they found themselves in a sticky situation, could turn tail and run. He couldn't. He had to sit there and take it.
Well, he didn't sit there. Sometimes he'd take the Defiance out and kick the butt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but at least in the Enterprise, if they're like, oh, my God, there's 50 starships coming, and they're like, right, let's go, piss off. Off they go.
Well, that's what makes me laugh when DS9's under attack from the Klingon fleet.
Yeah.
And Sisko gets a message saying, there's 6 Federation starships coming. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is the Klingon fleet, and you're sending 6 ships?
Warrior species.
Yeah. And you're going to send 6 ships. Yeah.
Send everything.
Yeah.
Send the Borg.
Yeah, I could just imagine. Could you imagine Sisko going into his office and saying, "I don't think you understood the message. I didn't say there's a few Klingons. It's the fleet."
Yeah.
Okay. Hello.
Can you get us out of here, please?
Yeah.
One episode that I do like, and a lot of people pan this episode, but from TNG is First Contact, that deals with the Prime Directive.
Which one? That.
First Contact, where they've been back to the planet, that they are going to make first contact with them, and where Riker's gone down, he's disguised as a Malkorian, I think they are.
Oh, yeah, is this the one with Worf's brother?
No, that's the one where he's in the hospital and has to have sex with the alien woman to help him escape the hospital. Yeah, a lot of people don't like that episode, but I think it's really interesting. So
he decided to shag the nurse to get away.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think that's interesting, that they've... It's not... Obviously, the Prime Directive says that they shouldn't contact anyone until they're capable of warp technology, and this species is just on the edge of it. And their reaction to it... I really like the way that this alien race doesn't want anything to do with them. They're really scared. You would you would always think that they would embrace, you know, these aliens coming. Oh, brilliant! You know, we're going to get all of this cool stuff. You know, and there's aliens out there, but they just want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, which is also a nice contrast to the actual film First Contact, when yes. they have the party for the people who've literally just got warp drive.
Yes.
And it's basically the same title of episode, basically the same segment is in both of them, but in the movie, these people want to be in the Federation. And in the series, these people are horrified at the thought of joining this like galaxy-spanning organisation.
Yeah, it terrifies them. They're very... I mean, they're literally just on the edge of making this discovery, and they're paranoid. They're much like, I would think, if that happened now, I think that's a nice parallel to us at our stage of development. I think if aliens did turn up, there would be people who would embrace it, like Marista Yale, I think she was called, played by Carolyn Seymour. She embraced it, and there would be people here who would think, oh, this is amazing, you know, we've got, you know, these aliens have shown up, all of our problems are over. But I think there would be a lot of people out there like
the other half, there'd be looting, there'd be riots, there'd be everything.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing and all, which is one of the fundamental reasons why the Prime Directive exists, is if you've got a religion-based society like ours, where there's, you know, a plethora of religions around the planet, if someone suddenly pops out of space and says, hi, we're from another planet and we look just like you, all them religions
everything
are going to come...
Everything you thought is wrong.
Yeah, all them religions are just going to unravel. And it would be anarchy.
That's something they've... I mean, they do talk about that a lot. What would happen to religions? And I'm not really sure. I think some people would freak out. And
I think it'd be nice to think that people who believe in certain things because that's the evidence that they've been given. And that's the evidence that. So then, if new evidence was presented to them, they would then change their beliefs to align with the new evidence that they've been given.
I know
it won't work like that, and it's a shame that some people can't. So it's like, you know, giving somebody a banana and saying, right, that's an apple, and you know, never seen fruit before, and you go, okay, this is an apple. But then actually somebody brings you up a book and says, well, no, that's a banana. Look, here's a banana tree, and it's growing. You go, oh, okay, then. Well, this is obviously a banana. But some people go, no, it's an apple. It's an apple.
Yes, and we'll always stick to that, yeah.
Yeah, I did see a film once, and I can't think of it at the top of my head, but this basically situation arose where the alien civilization popped up, and basically the way that the people on the planet interpreted it was, well, God created the universe, so therefore God created you too, and that's how they dealt with it.
Fair enough.
And they just completely went round it like that. That's it. You're more advanced than us, but that doesn't mean God doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I think some people would interpret it like that, but other people would like, question a lot of things. It's like in Voyager, Janeway doesn't believe in religion, she believes in science, and that's demonstrated in quite a few episodes, particularly the one where she's got to save Kes, and she has to go through the ritual, and the only reason they put her through the ritual is because it's what Janeway expected, and it had no bearing on anything. They were just proving to Janeway that faith is faith. Going through a ritual doesn't make you have faith. It's just something that, you know, and that's what they was trying to reinforce on Janeway. And Janeway then saw things in a different light. Because up until then, Janeway was all like science, 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 science.
Yeah.
And I can't forget the episode, but it's the woman who plays Kai Winn.
Oh, yeah.
She's like this like monk in the episode. And she actually says to Janeway at the end, you believe what you want to believe, but you can't, you know, science can't explain everything. And that also ties into Star Trek The Motion Picture, where Kirk says that V'ger has learned everything it can possibly learn. It now needs to leap beyond logic. And that's the same thing with the Prime Directive. You confront people with advanced technology. Does that allow them to evolve? Or do they stagnate? Because look at now. How many people now who 15, 20 years ago would walk down to post box and post a letter now jump in a car?
Yes.
You know, it's how would technology change civilization? You know,
I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it in, like you say, Colin, you know, in the last, you know, you say 15 years, in the last 15 years. I mean, the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
All those
people in the chat room, this pod of fun, the entire Star Trek network that's spread around the planet is all because of the internet.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't have imagined even 10 years ago, let alone 15 or 20.
Would have been advertised by sending letters, newsletters, and posting, and it would have taken years to put together. We would have had to do it in a big auditorium.
It just wouldn't have been possible. And now it's just incredible that, you know, within the space of that, you know, I've had internet access for about 14, 15 years, and the internet has moved on so much in that time, and especially in the last 10 or even the last 5. You know, with the advent of social networks, so now it's possible to communicate in theory with any. I mean, if they've got if they're on Twitter or if they're on Facebook and they've got net access, etc. But you know, there's over a billion people in the world who have net access. So in theory, you know, it's possible to reach out to almost anyone.
Well, here's a scary thought. There's 35.5 million people currently on Skype.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Every time I log on, I always look at that and think, wow. And
It's like Twitter, isn't it? I mean, you're having a conversation in Twitter depending on the time of the day, and you can be talking to people in like 7 or 8 time zones.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely absurd. You know, some people, I very, very rarely know what's going on Twitter, because you send a message, morning, and people saying, oh, good night, or I'm asleep.
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on?
Yeah. It's like the other day, Matt Hansen was chatting, and he's obviously in Central America, Pacific time zone. At the same time, I was chatting to him, I was chatting to Chris, who's in Japan. And at the same time, I was chatting to Chris, I was talking to Andy, who's in Australia. And we take this for granted now.
When we were talking earlier, we're on Sunday, somebody else was on Saturday, somebody else is on Monday. Yeah, you know, just oh dear.
Yeah. It's like Tom, who we'll do a deck 8 with. I've never physically met the guy. You know, it's through Twitter. It's the same as Mares, who's in Germany. I met Mares through the Technologic Forums. You know, and we're all friends, but we've never actually met.
It's like most of us lot as well. I mean, the only out of us lot, the only people who've met are Wayne and Paul. Oh, well, Adam and Paul Finch have met now.
I've never met Mark. We're sharing a bed together soon.
Yeah. The first time a lot of us are going to meet is at Star Trek London.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's going to be like, who are you? No, that... Yeah. Really?
You don't look like your photo.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you hear somebody's voice and you sort of make up a... I know it sounds weird, but you like to make a face for them, don't you? You sort of get an image in your head.
It's not when you're listening to the radio and you get like a visual image, and then when you see the person in the paint, you
go, okay.
I mean, it's like Chris Miles. He's definitely got a face for radio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Some of the people out there, you know, that they listen to us, and some of them know what we look like from Twitter pictures, etc., but they're going to be able to see more of that when we're at Star Trek London, because we're going to have photos put up and video, etc. So
you're quite brave, because you will put your pictures on your website.
Yeah, that's Wayne's idea. Wayne's the boss.
Yeah, I think that's quite brave, to be honest, because, you know, get stalkers.
Well, I answer them anyway. It's fine.
Yeah, because it's amazing how many people like, if you give out snippets of your personal life in a podcast or something. And then you get tweets or you get emails saying, oh, look, you know, thanks for sharing that with me and this, that, and the other. And you're just talking because, you know, by the podcast, you're just talking to your co-host, and then you do the subject. So the first bit is basically you're just having a conversation with your mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
And then you don't realise until
someone, oh, you think, oh, did I say that?
Yeah, you forget all of this stuff. Oh, no, I hope you're feeling better or this or that and... Yeah. You know, I hope work was okay. It's like, oh, hang on a minute. Oh, yeah, I forgot that. So you're putting all of this stuff out there.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, that's, you know, if someone, obviously a space-faring civilization, to get it back on the subject, would have space communication. So, I mean, what is it now? Is it to the Challenger on Mars? Is it 15-minute delay? Something like that,
yeah.
Whereas someone with subspace communications, you could literally talk to the Challenger in real time.
Which is bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when they get called from Earth and on the other side of the bloody galaxy.
Yeah, so, you know, if
it's civilization... It'll take us weeks to get back, but I can talk to you now.
Yeah. I mean, again, going back to the motion picture, when V'ger is obviously seriously more advanced than when it left Earth, and the Enterprise's computer, which is the most advanced computer in Starfleet, is too slow for it.
Yeah,
an alien civilization comes in, whatever computer system that they use, would look at our internet and our computers and mean, wow, you're still using that?
Yeah.
Really? Really? Well, like, at my last house, I was clearing out the loft and there was a box for a computer, a desktop computer at the back of the loft. Probably been up there 6-7 years. This thing wouldn't turn on, that computer wouldn't turn on a light switch now, or turn on a light bulb.
Your phone is far more advanced than that computer was.
Yeah, it is. It is. But by leaps and bounds. It's just bizarre. That what we used to work... I can remember sitting there before waiting for 5 minutes for a picture to download on the screen. Just so I could have a look at a Star Trek picture.
Yeah.
And now, if it's not there as soon as I click on it, I get the ump.
Yeah, it's like when you watch an old movie and you see the old computers, which are basically the massive, huge things, and you think, wow. And you look at the date on the film, it's like 89, something like that, and you think, that's not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know? And look how small computers, I mean, what is it now, a pocket calculator's got more power than what they used to get to the moon?
Yeah.
You know?
That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary.
It's unbelievable how technology goes on. And then, I mean, we can't even agree to build a spaceship as a planet to go to Mars. Every country's got to do it on its own.
Yeah.
So, but we'll spend billions on, you know, I don't know.
Blowing each other up,
yeah. Can you imagine if you put all that technology and all them world scientists together and said, look, let's all work together, let's build this ship. It's first of all go to the moon, build a space station, and then leapfrog to Mars using helium out from the moon.
Yes. Yeah, and then from Mars, let's move on to something else.
Yeah. We would be at Mars in 20 years.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. But we're too busy fighting each other. And that's another thing, an alien race, like the Vulcans. When the Vulcans
There's a second thought at the moment.
Yeah.
Excuse me a second, guys. I just have to drop off a second. Just continue amongst yourselves. I'll be back in a second.
They wouldn't give us a second thought at the moment because they'd look at us and they'd just think, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
They're just trying to kill each other.
Well, the Vulcans actually said in First Contact, too primitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't bother with you before because you were too primitive. It's the only reason because they sensed the warp trail that they thought, oh, we'd better go and have a look.
Yeah, and that's... And I mean, not being funny, but they probably detected the warp trail and all the forward... Because it was just after the Third World War, wasn't it? With, you know, so there's, you know, most of the major cities have been destroyed. There's probably nuclear fallout everywhere.
Yeah. it's like I said, no major government, 600 million people dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Carbon Creek in Enterprise, with T'Pol's great-great-grandmother, who looks just like T'Pol.
Yeah, funny though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's really weird like that. Well, she's DS9, Kira's mum looked like Kira. Yeah.
A lot of inbreeding.
Yeah. But, you know, she actually says in Carbon Creek, you know, we can't contaminate these people. They're too primitive.
Yeah.
And when he goes shopping, he comes out with the TV dinners. And he says, do you think these people have heard of a protein resequencer? Because, you know, they're primitive. They're using TV dinners. You know, what's wrong with these people?
Yeah, and there was another thing, because they were talking about the nuclear bomb, and he said, oh, I don't want to see these people, you know, destroy themselves or wipe themselves out. Or,
Nog. Did you use a nuclear bomb to time travel?
Did he? What was that episode?
Little Green Men.
Oh, yes.
You know, yeah. All you need is a hall full of chemosites and a nuclear bomb, and you can time travel.
So, yeah. The only thing is, if you get it wrong, you're buggered.
Yeah. But Little Green Men is another example of the Prime Directive not counting, because, you know, Quark was quite happy to sell warp drive advanced technology, replicators, and everything to America.
Yeah. Well, we all, I suppose we can just be grateful that it wasn't the Ferengi that came back or anything like that. Otherwise, all of a sudden, we'd have enemy troops beaming in left, right, and centre, and it would just be, yeah. But it is strange how, you know, you've got all these civilizations who are more or less at the same level of development, ships and, you know, the Federation, the Romulans, the Cardassians, Klingons, and all that sort of thing, and how some of them just couldn't give a monkey's what they do to other species and other civilizations, and where some of them have actually got this, you know, thing in place where, no, we don't interfere or anything like that. And, you know, the Ferengi, as you said, are prime examples of ones who just don't care. You know, they just want anything to just benefit themselves. And, of course, 9 times out of 10, it's not going to benefit them because they're too primitive anyway. But like those two who were trapped out in the Delta Quadrant, just completely, you know, that whole civilization that they would have just completely destroyed. You know, wiped out whatever sort of, you know, progression they would have made naturally, and just put into case the religion thing.
Yeah. Well, the Ferengi themselves got the warp drive by buying it. They never developed it. So, you know, they don't really give a crap about rules and regulations anyway.
No. It's just as long as they can get the gold press latinum for it, then job done. And UMOX, of course.
Don't forget UMOX. Which is quite possibly the weirdest sexual thing a Star Trek writer has ever come up with. Having your ears rubbed.
Yeah, you know, especially when they grab their ears to pull them off somewhere. You know, I'm not being funny, but if somebody grabbed my what's it and pulled me off somewhere, I wouldn't be expecting a telling off.
No, no. And also, I never understood that headdress that Ferengis wore. How does it stay on?
Oh, well, I'm thinking little Velcro circles behind the ears. That's the only, because funnily enough, I was watching a clip yesterday of Nog after he'd had his leg blown off, and he had, it might have been beforehand actually, and he had the headdress thing on at the back. And I don't understand how it, unless they're the ones like the glasses out, the Matrix, when they clip on his nose, if it's just they're quite tight and they've got like a string.
Morpheus's glasses.
Yeah, so they just sort of clip in behind their head. But you don't often see that many of them wearing it. I mean, it seemed to be when they were first introduced in the Next Generation that it was going to become standard uniform. But the Ferengi, you know, they all had it on. And then all of a sudden, I suppose it's a bit like flares and stuff here, isn't it? You know, everybody, all of a sudden, nobody wants to know.
I'm really, really glad when you look back at the archives and TV and you're thinking, God, I'm so glad I wasn't alive then. Look what they're wearing. And
yeah. I take it we're referring to the 60s.
Well, yeah, it's a lot. Was it flares in the 60s and 70s? And was it drain pipe trousers?
Yeah.
And spray on jeans?
I'm an 80s child, so I think I was just, you know, I just managed to get over the fence and enter some sort of normality. But it's all coming back now, though. It's all coming back. Everybody's starting to go and wear all the hippie stuff again.
Well, fashion's always been a circle.
Yeah. Fashion,
so. Yeah. But, yeah. Well, some fashions are good. I mean, you know, skin-tight jeans on a woman. That's never bad.
No. So. And really, really short skirts. Or little belts, as I like to call them.
But that's another thing. It's like in Star Trek, when you go to conventions, the most common uniform that the women wear is the TOS one, because it's comfy.
Yeah. And it shows their bum.
Well, there's that as well. But that's just for us. But it's very rare you'll see people in like the jumpsuit.
Yeah, well, that's what I was. My first thought for uniform Star Trek London was an Enterprise jumpsuit. So I thought, right, I'll just be able to slip that on, zip it up, job done. Lots of pockets, just in case, you know, get stuff to put in them. And then, of course, we've decided to go for the Nemesis uniforms, which isn't a problem at all because I'd like to have one of those. But you know, at the end of the day, if I did have an option of comfort over sort of looking good, I'd usually choose comfort now.
Yeah. I think Tom's got the Nemesis uniform as well, because he tweeted the pictures of it, so
yeah,
that'll be another one in the Nemesis uniform.
Yeah, well, Mark's has turned up. Mine's on order, and should hopefully be here in 2 to 3 weeks.
Close.
Yeah, I know. My laptop, it was going to be done about, well, a bit earlier, but my laptop wiped all of my measurements off and I had to wait until my mum was free to measure me again. Pathetic, I know, but it's really difficult to measure yourself.
True, true. You need to get someone to measure, especially inside leg. Yeah. You know, measuring your inside leg while you're
bending. Well, no, I'm only getting the top half of the uniform. I'm going to get the black trousers from somewhere else. Because I don't really want to spend that amount of money on just a pair of black trousers. I've got a proper suit that I wear for work. It cost about £200 for the whole suit. And the trousers, the Star Trek London, are around the same price as my proper suit trousers. So I don't really want to be getting those if I'm just going to be wearing them for one day. Well, not necessarily one day. I might wear them if I'm home alone and, you know, feeling a bit
heavy. What about your comm badge and your rank?
My comm badge and my rank are in my hand. I actually have them in my hand at the moment.
So what's the trackmate rank structure then? Who's giving us what?
Well, I just bowed down and I thought, right, I'm not even going to go up the top level. So I've decided to go for Lieutenant Commander and an engineering outfit. So I'm going for engineering. I don't really know what Mark and Wayne have worked out for that yet. I think
Mark would have been science or command.
Well, I think they've both gone for... Mark's tweeted his pictures. I think he was red. So I think they've both gone for command.
Right.
But with Wayne's... I thought Wayne would look good as an admiral because he's quite portly. And the admirals are as well. So I think he would have looked really good as an admiral.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mark has got that admiralty bearing. So, yeah, I could see him as...
Mark admiral?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I meant Wayne, sorry.
Wayne's an admiral.
Yeah, I think Wayne would have been good as an admiral, and then Mark could have been the captain, and then I could have been the engineer, and then we would have had a ship, nearly.
Yeah.
Well, we would have had a crew.
Let's check the chat room. Yeah, people in the chat room, who's going to Star Trek London and what you're going as?
Yes.
Right. Let's have a look in the chat room. Come, people, get typing.
Right, Mark's going Command Red, so he's captain.
Right.
As I said, I'm engineer. I think I've got Lieutenant Commander Phipps. One black, two bronze.
Because if you get, there's enough people in the chat room to write what if they're going to Star Trek London and what they're going at. Yeah, my books. That's me and you, Mike. Me and you, Michael, giving us Section 31. So.
Thomas has got Vice Admiral. Oh, he tried to get Vice Admiral Pips, but he can't get. Can't you just buy two sort of normal sets of Pips and stick them all together, Tom?
Nah. Super Salmon's hasn't got a uniform.
I've seen a site where you can get...
Come with me. Me and Mike, Super Salmon. Me and Mike are going undercover. You can come with us.
Section 31.
Section 31, yeah. Yeah, I've got a black jacket. I can swing that one.
Quite good, the Section 31.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, sorry about that. I'm back. I had a call from a work crisis, as always.
What are you going to Star Trek London as, Mark?
Are you going as a captain?
Yes.
Yeah.
Captain. What's Wayne going as? Because I reckon Wayne should be an admiral.
I don't know what Wayne's going as. He was...
Was he
going
to go to captain as well and you two are going to have a fight to the death?
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it? I mean, we're getting matching uniforms, aren't we, Paul? And Wayne has spoken about possibly getting a uniform. So I'm not quite sure. When we get him on, we'll check what he's going to do.
You've got security officer Paul Darren in the chat room going as Lieutenant Commander Security.
Darren, 73, brilliant.
Yeah.
Right, so that's
there you go. We'll put the crew together, Mark, in the chat room.
Yes.
So, apparently me, Mike and Super Salmon are all Section 31. So
so we'll stay clear of them.
Stay clear of us, from, yeah.
Yeah, you're not wearing a costume, are you, Colin, or are you?
No, I'm not. No, Mark just tweeted that he's just got a comm badge, so he's Section 31. Just going to blend in.
I want to hide his comm badge somewhere secretive.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to take Mike and Tom to the aquarium and show him George and Grace. So.
Not with Wales. Oh, because he's Welsh.
Yeah, Mike and Tom are from Wales.
That's
why in Deck 8 every time we introduce Tom I play the Captain Nerby Wales here movie.
Nerby Wales here, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got your Deck 8 downloaded and ready to listen to. I just haven't had a chance yet.
Yeah, it's Tom's little intro music, Captain Nerby Wales here.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so you're not dressing up then, Colin. You're Going to wear what, jeans and a geek t-shirt?
Oh, God, yeah, definitely a geek t-shirt, yeah. I've told Tom that I'm going to go down in my Star Trek London t-shirt. And then I'll probably switch into some of the t-shirts from some of the podcasts or something like that. Because there's quite a few people that got their own merchandise now. But yeah, there's got to be vendors there anyway selling t-shirts.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. We've seen on the floor plan they've got various bits of merchandise. So, yeah, they'll be flogging t-shirts. And, oh, I'm sure anything with the Starfleet logo on you're going to be able to get hold of.
Yeah.
I'm going to be spending so much money. It's so depressing. No, it's not. It's really good.
It's frightening. This is costing me an absolute bloody fortune.
Yeah.
And it's like I said to somebody, it's a once, if they do it again, brilliant, but you can't hedge your bets, and this could be our one shot.
Yeah.
Might as well make the most of it.
Yeah, we don't know if it will happen again next year. I mean, hopefully it will, and that depends on the event being a success. But like you say, Colin, I mean, you can't rely on it, you can't guarantee it, so.
You're not going to get five captains, even if they do it again next year.
So probably not.
So if there's a captain, now's your chance.
Someone just tweeted put on the messaging thing, the pictures of the Section 31 operatives. It looks like some sort of skin type latex. they're in the holodeck in the picture as well. I mean, that looks like it's going to be a really dodgy program.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Tom, go and get the Section 31 picture from Star Trek Online and put that in there. Because that's really cool uniform. I'm not wearing a uniform because I looked at the uniform, and if you look at the uniform and the comp badges and the pips and so on and so forth, you're talking about £200. And I thought, well, that's four autographs.
Yeah. I mean, I did think about it. I thought, yes, I'm going to get the uniform. And then I said, no, I'm not. And then I thought, well, yes, I am, because I've always wanted a uniform.
And it's going to be in the Guinness Book of Records.
Hopefully, if we get the most people in.
But the other way I looked at it and all is if they do it next year, then obviously all the stuff you've done this year, like if you get all the captains and you get, like, you know, John Delancey and you get Robert Beltram and people like that.
Don't need to do it again next year.
You don't need to do it again next year. So that money then can go on other stuff.
Yeah, and I've already got the uniform.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I got mine brought for me as a birthday present. So the money that I haven't spent on the tickets and the couple of the captains. Ones were for the birthday, so I've had a little bit of money that I can spend on seeing other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I was saying to Michael on Twitter, I think it was about a month ago, I was talking to Michael on Twitter about the hotel prices, and the hotels have suddenly cottoned on that there's like 14,000 Trekkies coming to London.
Some of the prices are astronomical.
Yeah, and that just shot up suddenly. Now, I'm alright because I booked early. I got mine through Trivago. That's a nice tip there, people.
Yeah.
And so I got discounts, but a lot of people, I mean, I've seen people tweeting and going on the forums and all that, and they're paying like £200 for the hotel because they just put the prices up.
Oh, right, that's what I paid. That's what I'm sharing.
I know what you paid, you've already told me. So, which is, obviously you and Mark are going to be very intimate and get to know each other very well by the end of it.
I'll probably end up sleeping in the Klingon bar.
Yeah, Paul. Tom's just put the Star Trek Online Section 31 costume in.
I believe that's have a quick look.
Yeah, you and, are you going to put pillars down in the middle of the bed, Mark?
You what, sorry?
Pillars down in the middle of the bed.
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah.
I was going to say we could sleep like head to toe, but then the naughty bits are still in the middle, so.
True. That's true. I hadn't quite thought of that. That's why you're wearing pyjamas, Paul.
I've got to buy pyjamas now.
I just see it's like going to be one of them comedies, but I always sleep on the left-hand side.
You'll be arguing over which side of the bed, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like one of them comedies from the 70s.
It's like I said last night, it would be like Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah.
Where they used to sit in bed in their little pyjamas together. Yeah.
Yeah, reading the paper. Oh, I can imagine you two doing the breakfast routine then. So, Morecambe and Wise when they're chopping up the grapefruits and that.
Yeah, and the toast's flying out, and yeah. That'll be quite amusing. Yeah, we've got to find somewhere to have breakfast, actually.
I'm sure we'll go, yeah.
What time do you like getting there on the Friday?
Probably about 12, I think. Because I'm actually in London. I'm going to a seminar at Microsoft in Victoria on this Friday morning, which is quite handy because it means work gets to pay for my train ticket. Because technically I'm on leave that day, but I said I would go to this thing, so work's going to pay for my train ticket, which is cool. So yeah, that's a little bit of a saving. That's about sort of 50 quid or something that I'll save.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm there at 9, and then I want to try and be there at the event early for about 12-ish. So I've got to leave this event slightly early and then leg it across London to get there. And obviously the DLR, there's work on the DLR, so you've got to get a replacement bus service, which is going to be, it's going to be really busy because with that many Trekkies turning up, there's going to be a lot of people trying
Trekkies
to get on
tour.
Those buses. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people trying to get on those buses.
I have found out that if you get the tube to Canning Town, it's only a 15-minute walk.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I've actually did have a look at the route on Google Street View, and I was thinking, well, you know, if I can jump straight on a bus, I'll do that. But if there's a massive queue for buses, it's probably going to be quicker to walk, to be honest. As long as it's not, you know, peeing it down with rain or anything, then...
Because I'm going to get Bunny to Euston, get the tube to Canning Town and just walk.
Yeah.
So, you know, probably
we've
just...
We've had a couple more donations.
Oh, have we? What are we at? What are we at? Let's have a look.
800... So somebody's winding me up now. We're now on £814.47.
Yes.
Yeah, and as why don't forget that people who are pledging money. Don't forget, you don't have, you know, you can pledge money. You don't have to do it now. You know, there's lots of ways you can pledge the money.
That's true. Let's just have a look then. So we're coming up to the hour, Paul, aren't we?
We are.
So we'll see who's given the biggest.
Who's given the biggest thing for the
donation?
Easter.
The one with 47 pence was Paul and Emma. So, yeah.
Oh, that, you know, that doesn't surprise me at all.
So, in the last hour, that's looking like a fairly good donation there. Let's just have a look on Amnesty at when that was come through.
So you're getting close to the grand.
Yeah,
we're getting
we
fairly close.
By so 3, 4 o'clock, I reckon we'll be there.
It looks like so far in the last hour, the highest donation has been at £20.47. So it looks like that they could be on track to win the Polaroid tablet PC.
Yep. A few minutes to go yet, though, so if you want a lovely little...
When you're doing the iPad...
The iPad, it goes to the person who actually donates the most throughout the whole podathon.
So is that secret bidding then?
No, well, I don't know who's got it at the moment. I think the maximum bid, the largest donation that we've had, it's not from a corporate, somebody corporate, we're not doing those, is £200. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, £200.
£200, so 200...
Still getting an iPad for half price.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's such a generous donation. That really is.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well done, that person.
Yes.
Yes,
well
thank
done.
You very much.
And it doesn't matter how big it is, folks. You know, if it's a pound, it all makes a difference.
Yeah, every little bit does help. Every little bit really does. So, we've got about or a euro or a dollar.
Or a dollar or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah,
a dime.
A dollar. No, a dollar. I'm sorry, if you're American, it's got to be $2 because your money's not worth that much.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I think we've got about 6 minutes until we hit the hour. So if anyone else would like to put in a higher bid than £20.47, then they shall they will be able to bag themselves that Polaroid tablet.
Yeah. Get in there, people.
Give us your money.
Give us all your money, not all your money, some of your money. Give us your money. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, not all your money, just most of it.
Yeah, we'll let you have enough for your bus fare home.
Yeah, just make sure you got some. Well,
I'll drive you home. It's fine as long as you're not in like miles away.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, then did we? I know I had to jump off for a bit. Did we completely stray off topic? Okay.
big time.
No, I think we did all right.
Yeah, well, we did the Ferengi coming to Earth and Quark ignoring the Prime Directive, so we covered that.
Oh, that's
Little
good.
Green Man. So we did Little Green Man, and we did, like, you know, a few other tangents, and then we ended up on Star Trek London.
Which always seems to consume a lot of our discussion time, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're excited. It's our first big convention for, what, 20-odd years, so...
Yeah, so it's the first convention I've ever been to, and well, certainly the first Star Trek convention, and the first convention of any kind. So, yeah, it's going to be really, really exciting. So, 5 weeks, and it'll be the Sunday, so it'll be almost over, which is a sad
thing.
We
will all have hangovers at this point, this time next month.
Yeah. Well, you're all going to have caffeine withdrawal symptoms tomorrow morning, so there you go.
Oh, I don't drink it. I'm all right.
No, I can't drink coffee because it gives me a headache.
I just go slightly loopy.
Yeah, it's a little known fact anyway, there's just as much caffeine in good tea than
there
is in coffee.
Yes, there is, yeah. Yeah, because I don't drink coffee either, but I do drink tea like it's going out of fashion, so... Yeah.
I drink Diet Coke and Starling.
There's a lot of caffeine in tea, so if you drink a decent cup of tea, you'll get just as much caffeine as if you drank coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, I've already had 3 cups of tea this morning, so...
Yeah, well, we're English, we have to wake up with a cup of tea.
Oh, definitely.
I can't function without my first cup of tea.
No, I usually have about 3 before I get to work, and I usually down 2 cups of tea in about 45 minutes. So.
Yeah. First,
you know, that's the girls where I work are like that as well. They come into work, and before they've even done the stuff they're meant to do, they put the kettle on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the first thing I do. Put my laptop in the docking station, boot it up, and go and get a cup of tea. And when I get back to my desk, I log in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Right.
So
I think
the next person then.
Yeah, we've got a episode review coming up, which I'm pretty sure is with Cena. So we've got a live.
Well, she's up early then.
Yeah, she is. I mean, that was her choice. She did want to come on early, so I think that's 6 a.m. for her.
Yeah, she's.
And we got Mike as well.
Yeah, Central American time, ain't she? So six hours behind us.
Yeah, 6 hours behind. But I guess with. You know, having her daughter, etc., probably makes sense for her to get it out of the way early in the morning.
Yeah. All right, then. I'm going to bow out, guys. Carry on with all the good work, and I'll see you in a few hours' time.
Yep.
Brilliant. Right. Speaking to you, Colin. Speak to you soon.
Thanks for joining us, Colin.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheers. Bye. Okay, so I'm going to play...
I've really enjoyed that.
No, that was really good fun. So I'm going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll jump into hour 17.
There is a woman, the Countess Regina Bartholomew. She was created as a holodeck character for one of Commander Data's programs.
If I could watch Ship in a Bottle, the show with James Moriarty, I'd laugh at Barclay as he stutters to say, "You're aware this just can't be." If I could make photons be solid, the first thing that I'd like to do is to help James make Regina for real, and then again she could be human too. But the Heisenberg compensators won't do the things I want to do once I enhance them. I tried real hard enough to know it's just not really possible on the holodeck.
Professor, I wonder why you're in so much of a hurry. Is this woman involved with you in some illegal venture? Your computer designed her to be a person of impeccable integrity.
If I could play Holmes like old Data, and Geordi would be Watson too, I'd fix the holodeck so things could be perfect, just so they could spend time just the two. But to make things right, we have to fool and use his ruse to save the duo and help them. So we'll stick them in a fake shuttle so they can go where they want to go for a lifetime.
Yes, Bella.
Can we go back to us someday?
Of course, my dear. Of course.